Hello, Christine Gallagher here from the Wide Open Air Exchange, bringing you an episode from the archives. And it's to celebrate 40 years of the Phantom Dancer program being broadcast here on 2SER, hosted by the wonderful Greg Poppleton. It's such a great service to community radio. 40 years of broadcasting a weekly program. Thank you, Greg. We really appreciate everything you do. And I'm going to bring you now into this conversation that was first broadcast on 2SER in April 2023, back when I had the Pogues for the Wide Open Air Exchange theme music. Here we go.
2SER acknowledges the custodians of the Gadigal and Darug lands from which we broadcast.
Hello and welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange, coming to you from the 2SER studios on Gadigal country. I'm Christine Gallagher, and the Wide Open Air Exchange is a place to meet people with fascinating vocations, interesting expertise, and special interests. And our guest today will be a familiar voice to people right across Australia on the Community Radio Network as host of the long-running radio program, The Phantom Dancer.
I'm your Phantom Dancer, Greg Poppleton, with your non-stop mix of swing and jazz from live 1920s to 1960s radio and TV.
The National Broadcasting Company invites you to listen to Glenn Miller's music.
That's right. Greg Poppleton is getting the Wide Open Air Exchange treatment today. We'll be hearing about Greg's formative experiences discovering swing and jazz music as a very young child, and what it is about live music radio from the early 20th century that captures his imagination. Because The Phantom Dancer showcases radio broadcasts from the 1920s through the 1960s, when swing and jazz music big bands would play live in the studio. And Greg includes in his broadcasts of The Phantom Dancer the banter and commentary of the original radio hosts. And in that respect, it's sort of a cultural history program as well as being a specialist music show. But for now, I want to bring you into my conversation with Greg Poppleton by listening a bit closer to the music of Glenn Miller. Because my first question to Greg was to ask him to describe swing music from the 1930s, and then we quickly got sidetracked and didn't ever come back around to answer that. So instead, here's a demonstration up front. This is a big band led by Glenn Miller, one of the most famous big band leaders of the era. I believe it would be the Glenn Miller Orchestra. So picture an orchestra-sized band led by Glenn Miller, playing the trombone, I think. And then you'll have sections of musicians, so the saxophones, the trumpet section, more trombones. There's a drummer, a double bass player, you know, an upright double bass. There'd be a guitarist, a lead clarinet. There might have been a piano player, I'm not sure, pianist. Picture all of that as we bring you into my conversation with Greg Poppleton on the Wide Open Air Exchange. Greg Poppleton, welcome to the Wide Open Air Exchange.
Well, thank you very much for having me on, Christine.
One of the things I try to do on this program is have no assumed knowledge. For someone who doesn't know what swing music is and what particularly about the 1930s swing music, a culture or subculture, how would you explain it to someone who's entirely new to swing?
Well, first of all,
yes.
There are two things that I want to address in that question.
Okay.
At the beginning, when you said that when you interview having no assumed knowledge.
Yes.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because that is how I interview. And the reason why I do it, and I don't do many interviews, but the reason why I do it is because it encourages people to talk. And it means that you don't direct them. And if you don't direct people, then you can find out the most amazing stories.
Right.
Now, I interviewed for the Phantom Dancer when I used to do interviews for a venue in the 1990s. I talked to a bebop saxophonist by the name of James Moody, who's no longer with us. So he was around in the 40s. Now, without asking questions,
yes.
I would just do a little preamble, say, look, James, this is what the show is. This is what I'm about. This is what the interview is. I'm not going to ask you any questions. I just want you to just to talk.
Yeah.
Okay. He was telling me things like the history of rap.
Right.
Right. Now, as a black man in America in the 1940s, he was telling me about what Malcolm X also mentioned, which was where people would have parties and they would have two decks. And there would be a guy playing records. Mm-hmm. That'd be Glenn Miller records,
yes.
Say, on each deck, and would be talking in between, DJing. And he was saying even further back in the 20s when he was a kid, there would be people who would be rapping. This idea,
yes.
I say this to people, there was rap in the 20s, and I played a rap from 1932 on the Phantom Dancer, and I tell people, hey, there's a country and western guy rapping on 1932 radio. They don't believe
yes,
it.
Yes, well, I mean, immediately what comes to mind for me is scatting as being a kind of rapping, would you say? I mean, in that you're a vocalisation that's somewhat improvised.
Another good question, and I'm not a musicologist, but I would say that there's a distinct difference between rapping and scatting.
Mm.
Scatting requires a lot of musicality. Because it requires a knowledge of the melody and it requires a knowledge of chords.
Yes.
It also requires a knowledge of rhythm. Rap doesn't require a knowledge of chords. It doesn't require much musicality. It does require rhythm, but there are set rhythms. It's interesting to hear raps that are extant from before when rap became popular.
Yes.
Because it was obviously a style of the streets that was sometimes brought in by personalities into the radio studio. But they felt so restricted by it that they would usually try and introduce a melody to it or they'd speed it up. They just think, when is this going to end? It's so dull! And rap is incredibly, in my opinion, incredibly dull.
So what isn't dull to you? What does...
Jazz isn't dull to
me.
Classical music isn't dull to me. Mm. Arabic music isn't dull to me. Hindi film music isn't dull to me. So music that is creative, expressive, that comes from the heart, that doesn't have any arrogance, that doesn't have any pretensions, that doesn't impose, that doesn't have some impost, a cultural impost, that to me is interesting. Now, rock music and rap and hip-hop to me have a cultural impost. And the impost is that you have big music saying, this is good, this is how you have to behave, this is cool. And look, I'm not into, I suppose I'm a bit of a contrarian. I'm not a person who follows the crowd, and so when big music tells me to listen to something, I'm not going to listen.
So what was it, what is it, or was maybe the origin of your interest in that 1920s, 30s swing and jazz? What was that saying to you when you first heard it?
Well, I distinctly remember when I first heard it, or my first memory of it, was watching Louis Armstrong on TV when I was 3 years old. Mm. Sometimes, well, the transmission would break down. This was in the early 60s, but sometimes programs would run under time or they didn't have enough advertisements and they would fill the time with a soundie, which was an old video. Usually made in the 40s and 50s, and this one was Louis Armstrong, and all he was doing was playing his cornet with his white handkerchief, and he was in front of a curtain, and the sounds that he made, I can still feel how it just went straight to the heart, because there was an effortlessness about it, but there was a craft and there was an art, and I felt like he was talking to me through the cornet, but he was doing something that was so complicated, though I didn't realise it at the time. As a three-year-old, I thought anyone could do it. It's like watching good magic, and all of a sudden Purple becomes green, up becomes down, your whole world is questioned.
Right.
So that's what got me interested. And then there was very little around where I grew up.
So we're talking 1960s.
Early 1960s.
Sydney or somewhere
else?
Sydney. In Sydney, Australia.
Yep, in a city, working class.
Yes.
My mother worked in a shop. My father was a bus driver. Okay. And I had four sisters.
Mm.
One was younger, three were older, and the two oldest ones were in their teens. So they were listening to a lot of, of pop music at the time.
Right.
Because in the 60s... it wasn't called rock music. It was called pop, something that totally baffled me. But it's part of the arrogance of rock music, that it was called big music, called it pop, and people accepted it. Yeah. It was later on in the 70s when people started to try and intellectualize this simple music with fusion and whatever else and making big concept albums that all of a sudden the word rock music was used.
Greg Poppleton is our guest on the Wide Open Air Exchange on 2SER. Greg is known to community radio listeners across the country as host of The Phantom Dancer. And we're hearing about Greg's interests in swing and jazz music, including a memorable formative moment of seeing Louis Armstrong performing on television. That was when Greg was only 3 years old. 3 is very young to have that kind of formative experience in that moment that you saw Louis Armstrong on television. That's an early memory.
It certainly is.
And did it inspire you to learn to play music or sing?
It did.
Yeah.
It did. Unfortunately, though, I didn't come from a musical family and I didn't come from a family with means.
Which you need to buy musical instruments,
you
don't
need to
you?
Buy
and
musical
take
instruments.
Lessons and all of that kind of thing.
So what would happen would be occasionally I'd get hold of second-hand instruments. Sometimes they'd be reconditioned.
Mm.
But nobody thought, including myself, nobody thought of a teacher. So I'd try and teach myself. Like, for example, I tried to learn guitar.
Right.
But not even my sister's boyfriends when I was 8 or 9 who played rock guitar with those horrible acoustic strings could tune the guitar that I had.
What kind of guitar did you have?
It was a guitar, but it was probably so warped
without anybody
knowing that it couldn't be tuned.
Yes, yes.
It had a nice sound to it, though. And then I tried to learn flute. My cousin had a flute and he said, yeah, you could try that. But then, no teacher, and I tried.
Mm.
I tried singing early on. That didn't work. Now, the other thing I'll show you can't see, I think I have the world's smallest hands. I've yet to meet somebody who has
You're holding up your hands for people.
So you put your hands to mine. Here you go. There you go. Oh, yours are bigger than mine.
Are they?
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. Yep. I say a little bit off mic.
Yes, sorry. I've got my sweaty palms too.
So that's no good for a guitar. I mean, you can have narrow, narrow fretboard guitars with small fingers. No good for piano. I tried to learn pianoforte.
Right.
But I couldn't reach the chords.
There is something to that because, one of the sort of common themes we think about or explore on this program is sometimes I refer to it as sort of like innate qualities or personal qualities that make you suited to what you do.
Mm.
But sometimes they're physical. You can have a pianist's hands or not. You can have the height for basketball or not. You could, whatever other kind of physical traits might make you suited or not suited to something. So that it makes sense that you were trying things out, but you're saying you just didn't really have the hands for playing musical instrument.
I couldn't even form diminished chords on a ukulele, of all things. And again, continuing my pattern, what did I buy?
Yeah.
This is when ukuleles weren't at all popular and they were hard to find. A $15 ukulele from a music shop. I didn't know it was a toy ukulele. Couldn't even keep the thing in tune.
Right.
Anyway, and I couldn't even, I couldn't even finger a diminished chord. Now, you could say that if you have some physical difficulty, right, then there are workarounds. I mean, there are famous workarounds, like Django Reinhardt had a burnt hand, yet he had his own unique style.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there are workarounds.
So no excuses for me.
Yeah. This doesn't have to be linear, of course, but what I've got so far, though, is you as a 3-year-old seeing Louis Armstrong on television. You as at 1985 starting The Phantom Dancer, so that is at aged sort of
23?
I started the Phantom Dance when I was 24.
24. There is a piece of the puzzle there that I'm interested in, which is you have that sort of musical awakening,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you can see that difference between what speaks to you compared with your sisters and their interest in pop music.
Mm.
And you did explain sort of trying out different musical instruments. But how do we get from to you launching Phantom Dancer as such a specialised music program? Do you collect music in that time? Is it because also from here, listening to your program regularly, I get a sense that a lot of it is American jazz and swing music, that kind of radio hall. Is that the right? I don't know if that's the right term, but the era of American radio where you have the bands in the studio playing swing and jazz. And there's something, it's a very consistent sound from week to week. So you really do have a specialty music program. How did you hone in so much on that particular, you know, the big band leaders is the sort of impression that I have of your interest in music?
Yeah, well, I'll answer the parts of your question from the latter part of your question backwards.
Okay.
So the reason why there's so much American material is that there's so much archival American material around.
Right.
And I imagine the reason for that is they had such a huge radio industry, a dispersed population,
yes,
a large number of radio stations, and four big networks that produced a lot of material, and a lot of smaller networks that produced a lot of material. And a lot of that material would be pressed onto disc from about 1928 on, and from the late 1940s would be put on tape. So there's a lot of it around. Whereas in Australia, we had one network, nationwide network, which was the ABC. And they've recorded some stuff, and we had some smaller commercial networks, and there is a lot of maybe spoken word stuff from the 40s and even the 50s that's around. But radio recording off the radio in Australia, as far as I understand, didn't even happen until 1936. And other countries have even smaller archives because of war and because of economic situations.
Maybe I'm labouring this too much, though, but I think it's because my particular upbringing and the music that I grew up with in Australia was very Irish, traditional Irish music, as well as, I don't know if you'd call it parlour music, but the older people in our lives, they were singing to us songs like Daisy, Daisy, give me your answer, do, which is very British.
Yes.
I wasn't really exposed to that early 20th century American music really till later. Like, I know who Glenn Miller is, and there was that neo-swing revival that happened then in the late 80s where big bands started to make a bit of a comeback, and the movie Swingers, and even a re-release of
So how
Louis
did I
Armstrong.
Hear this stuff?
So, yeah, I'm just curious, like, you in Australia, how did you find the American jazz and swing music, and then did you – it's was it a specialised thing for you to then collect it? Where was the exposure?
There wasn't much of it about.
Mm.
So my father was born in 1916. My mother was born in 1923. So they grew up during the swing era.
Yes.
But they were modernists. So they very much encouraged my sisters in their love of the contemporary music of their time.
Yes.
So my father would even sit down while my sisters were listening to, you know, whatever it was, you know, whether it was a disco album in the 70s for my younger sister, or, you know, some 45s from the 60s for my older sisters. That was encouraged. The idea, the modernist idea that you live in the now was very much part of my parents. So I wasn't encouraged by my parents. Mm. There was a small collection of 78s, and I played one once, and my father said, right, smash it, put it in the bin.
What?
So I was not encouraged.
Because he didn't approve?
Because, yeah, for some strange reason that he didn't articulate, he didn't approve. But from that moment of hearing Louis Armstrong...
Yeah.
And also there's a moment where I was sitting on his knee and there was jazz ballet happening on the TV, And I asked him about different types of music, and he said,
This is your dad?
This is my dad. Yeah. So I'm sitting on his knee.
Yes.
So I'm pretty young.
Yeah.
And he was talking about the different types of music, and he said, jazz music is... He didn't use the word bad. I've forgotten the exact word that he used, but whatever it was, I thought,
that sounds interesting.
That's the non-boring music.
Is that because of the association of jazz with as being a kind of jazz cigarettes and, you know, was there some kind of cultural association that it was subversive or something like that?
That's right, yeah. It was a subversive music. Mm. It started, some of it started in the brothels of New Orleans, and it had always been associated with persons who were possibly ne'er-do-wells.
Mm.
Whether in Sydney after the 40s, whether they were bodgies and wedgies, or the working class with the Dixieland revival. So my father and my mother were very much more into the dance music, the dance bands of the 30s.
Yes.
So there was no connection between. It wasn't like I like this music because my parents do. There was nothing like that.
And I wasn't leading you in that direction at all, because it's not always the way that you get your musical interest from your parents' record collection.
No.
It's not certainly not what my experience was either. But yeah,
and there's no nostalgia because I didn't live in that time. But what it was, I suppose it was those formative moments, those two formative moments, combined with the rarity of it. And the only places where I'd hear the music that I liked would be occasionally on Merry Melodies cartoons, particularly ones from the 30s, and sometimes on ABC radio.
Mm.
Very, very rarely.
If you're just joining us, welcome. You're listening to the Wide Open Air Exchange on 2SER. Our guest, Greg Poppleton, is sharing personal reflections on how he came to his special interest in 1920s and 30s swing and jazz music as a young person in the 1960s, which was in contrast to the interest of his peers and siblings in pop and rock music at that time. Greg is host of the long-running radio program The Phantom Dancer, which is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network, featuring original radio broadcasts of swing and jazz music from the early 20th century. So let's return now to hear more about Greg Poppleton's interests in that style of radio by first listening to a clip from The Phantom Dancer.
Sam the Man Taylor and our big band and pushing!
So occasionally on ABC there'd be some sort of a jazz program or it was usually kind of a nostalgia, easy listening program, and occasionally they would play a portion of an air check. And the energy of those air checks, the fact that these are recordings of people playing live, and you can hear the audience. You can hear the energy from the band. The bands will always play at a bit of a faster clip than what they do in the recording studio. They're playing, they're improvising more because they're not restricted by the recording time of a record.
Right.
The American radio, their announcers also presented these programs with a great sense of occasion.
Yes.
And so all those things combined is what makes me interested in the music. So it's not just the music in itself, but it's in the context of radio and broadcast.
The theatre of the mind.
The theatre of the mind, exactly.
So you could imagine all of that. You're imagining the host dressed up and hosting, and as you say, it's an occasion, and there's the band all playing live and it's palpable.
And you can hear the audience. You can hear the clang of dishes. Sometimes the audience is ill-behaved. What happened to that woman that went, woo, 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 woo? What happened to her? Was she ushered away?
Yes.
What happened to the guy who said, get on your ass? Was he kindly escorted away?
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Can a appreciate that because there was an album that I used to have, which was a Rat Pack live album, and there was a quality to it, and it was the banter in between the songs, and you could hear the audience laughing.
Yes.
And there was no vision, but I could imagine the antics on stage, and I knew you could hear when there was a physical joke that had happened, even though there was no words that were spoken. You could imagine it all.
And the thing is, because these people worked so frequently, like they would do multiple gigs a day, every day of the week, every day of the year, they had the craft.
Yes.
And because they had the craft, they could create the art. So in creating the art, they could be relaxed. And you do have these wonderful moments where, you know, things drop, or you hear these extraordinary improvisations, or you might hear that, oh, there's still time to go. You're going to have to make something up. And then all of a sudden it's a big band will go back to let it be, and then away they'll go again, that sort of thing.
So it's the live radio aspect of it as well as the music. So
that's
that intersection of your interest in radio and that music.
And the other thing is the insight, the first-hand insight into the mid-20th century. Now, even though it's, you know, I would like to certainly hear more, you know, from Australia and from other countries, but America was still the cultural hub.
Yes.
So to hear broadcasts interrupted by news flashes, to hear the kind of language used, to hear the kind of slang, to hear some of the cultural references that people dropped during these music broadcasts makes it more than just listening to music. There are layers. It's like listening to a or watching a well-written play.
Yes.
Say Shakespeare. There are layers upon layers upon layers of subtext.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the twin pipes of Bing Crosby and Rosemary Clooney in a buddy call arrangement of Shine On, Harvest Moon.
Twin pipes, huh?
This is also a four tonsil job.
Oh, we have wire wheels, too.
Oh, shine on. Shine on, harvest moon, up in the sky. I ain't had no lovin' since January, February, June or July.
Snow time ain't no time to stay outdoors and spoon. So shine on, shine on, harvest moon,
for me and my gal.
And that is speaking to the sort of the media and the craft of what of the broadcast.
Mm.
But you also mentioned that moment, you know, when you're sitting on your father's knee and that thought of, oh, this is something
we could naughty.
Quite, naughty, maybe.
Yeah.
And when I think of 1920s, 30s US, America, I'm thinking about prohibition and the speakeasy, the flappers, you know, women who were breaking away from gendered expectations of how a woman should act and how they dress and dance, and the Charleston where you're dancing with your legs up in the air sort of thing.
Yes.
Is
shocking.
Would have been at that time.
Yes.
So is that part of the appeal of it as well? Are you imagining all of, is that culture, subculture, a part of it for you?
It's part of the subtext.
Yes.
There is a continual breaking of taboos.
Mm.
And particularly for women, even working during wartime, that sort of thing. So you do get that insight into the changing place of women. Although, because a lot of my air checks, they don't go much later. Well, they don't go any later than 1971.
Right.
Far more interesting things post-1971 that are not addressed.
Yes.
You know, because we're still talking a time when women couldn't own property and all that sort of palaver. Yeah.
Greg Poppleton, it's been a real pleasure to chat. Thank you so much for coming in. It's been great.
Christine Gallagher, it has been a joy and a pleasure.
That's Greg Poppleton, a conversation recorded in April 2023, and we're revisiting it today to celebrate 40 years of Greg's services to community radio as host and producer of the Phantom Dancer program. Broadcast on 2SER each Tuesday at midday. Thanks, Greg.